There are few major cities in the world where at some time or another during the past almost 80 years, there has not been a musical event which captured the imaginations, captured the hearts of all those who were fortunate enough to attend it. A concert by Fritz Kreisler. As a virtuoso, he is unsurpassed in our time. As a composer, he has made a towering contribution to music. And as a human being, he is a warm, pleasant, witty, and modest person. Mr. Kreisler, it's truly an honor to have you with us. And may I personally wish you a very happy birthday.
Thank you very much for it.
Did you get a lot of telegrams and messages of congratulations?
Tremendous amount of it. And to tell the truth, I don't see how I deserve it. Because suddenly I'm being praised for something which I have lost, which I haven't got anymore. I am no more an artist who can prove by what he does how high he stands. And it would have been better for me if I had received all these praises at the time when I had more merit for them, when I deserved them better.
Mr. Kreisler, would you care to comment on music in general? I mean the whole body of music, about its place in man's life and what it means or should mean to him.
Music means exactly to me as it does to everyone. Because the influence of our surrounding life, of our cultural phrases and manifestations, is all embedded in music. The religion, as I said, our social life, any reception, patriotism, everything that is religious, everything that's patriotic, that is connected with love and with hatred and with personal feelings, is accompanied by music. It's unthinkable amount of years. The mankind has used music for the expression of their inmost feeling. You couldn't express it otherwise.
I'm just reminded that Fritz Kreisler made his concert debut, I believe under the name of Friedrich Kreisler, when he was a little lad of but 7 years. This led to his being accepted by the Vienna Conservatory, where after 3 years of study, he won the gold medal for first prize in violin. So at 10, young Fritz was sent to Paris for further study and astonished his teachers by winning the Premier Grand Prix from a field of contestants averaging 10 years older than he. At 13, the young violinist toured America as the wonder child of the violin. Mr. Kreisler, as I recall these early milestones in your career and as you consider them those years, do you think your early success was a detriment or an asset?
It was in some way, it was helpful in some way because it helped me to learn and to get acquainted with the greater man and to understanding. But later on, in my early youth, I was glad that my success was not so so great, and that the publicity which was accorded to me was not so great, because it helped me along. Because I believe advancement in life is fight. You have to fight to advance yourself, and if you are too successful, and if everything is going your way, you don't fight anymore.
As one might expect, Fritz Kreisler owns a large collection of violins. Now, among all these distinguished instruments, do you have a favorite from that collection, Mr. Kreisler?
I had them, but I sold them because my wife insisted that it was unethical for an artist to have so many violins which were worth so much and which took a lot of money away and from other people. Therefore, I had to sell them and give it to her in order that she could use it for her charities, which she did. I had two Stradivarius, two Guarneris, and a number of other Guarneri-types violins, and I loved them very much, but I couldn't play them simultaneously, and so consequently she was quite right, and for that reason I only kept one violin for myself, which is, to my idea, one of the best, but certainly not one of the most expensive ones.
I see. Then you might say that in the matter of violins, you were polygamous.
But I have become monogamous now.
Well, really, how important is the instrument itself? Could a really great violinist make, say, a $200 violin sound like a priceless Stradivarius?
I believe he could. I wouldn't say the entire tonality is in it, but 70% of the tone of an artist lays in his fingertips.
On April 26th, in 1944, Fritz Kreisler was struck by a truck while crossing a street here in New York City. For days, he lay in a coma. Doctors despaired of his life. It was 27 days before the crisis was passed, and his recovery could be predicted. Now, the next big question was, would he ever play again? Mr. Kreisler, would you tell us how it came about that you did play again? Wasn't there something about your wife tricking you into playing?
Well, that's true. In the fact, she did it twice. She was worried whether I could ever play, whether I would ever have the memory of bringing back certain phases of literature. Furthermore, she didn't know whether I could handle the violin correctly. But mostly she was afraid of the memory. And so she asked me, she said that she was troubled by something and she would like to know how a certain passage of the Mendelssohn Concerto should be played correctly, whether I could help her. And I said, well, how can I help you? Can you tell what I'm telling to you directly to a violinist? It's too complicated. She said, oh, I'll remember it. Let me say it. And so I played it for her, number one. And then she was worried about other things. So she asked Albert Spaulding to come to me and tell me that he was going to play the Bach sonatas at a concert. And he was referring to me and said, Fritz, you know, there are certain complications about the fingering that annoy me a little, because I'd like to explain it to my own pupils, the correct fingering. And I have a little trouble with my hands now. That's what he told me. I'm a little labored, I don't know. Could you give me an idea, so I can make a note in my manuscript in order to show them? And so I played it to him. You know, I fell for that trap, you know. In those days, I wasn't so clever to realize what my wife had done. And so that's what happened.
I know, Mr. Kreisler, you're very fond of dogs. Do you have a dog now?
No, not more anymore. In the first place, we are too old. My wife and I, we are very old. And secondly, we are living in an apartment. And in order to do that, I wouldn't trust my dog to anybody else than my. I would take him out myself, and I cannot do it so well anymore. And furthermore, if we lived in the country, they could run around and have a greater freedom. And third, and not last, I know they don't last very much. If by any chance, you know, I would get a dog that's 7 or 8 years old, and he would die on me, it would be the greatest calamity. So there you see how life is, you know. At our age, you cannot anymore do things.
We have an old recording here, Mr. Kreisler, probably your first. I'm told it's among your very first, made 45 years ago in 1910. It's titled Aus der Heimat. on the homeland. Would you like to hear a little of it?
Gladly, because I don't remember anymore what it is.
What do you think of it?
As far as I can judge, it was an experiment. I had just heard the piece by Dvořák. It's an orchestral piece. And I wanted to transcribe it for the violin. And I made it on the spur of the moment. And I said I had no time to write it at that time. So I said to my friend who was an accompanist, you heard what they say, just follow me and copy the accompaniment as far as you can do it from the score, which he did. He was a fine musician. And then I played it, and I cut out certain things and transposed it to others and cut it out their way, and in order to get the idea what I would like to do with it. So really, it isn't a recording. It's an experiment for a transcription which I wanted to write and have published.
By the time most people reach 80, they're quite content to sit down and rest for a while, especially if their career has been as eventful and as crowded as your own. Do you consider your work finished, Mr. Kreisler? Is there some other accomplishment you still look forward to?
No personal accomplishments. The only, well, worth my life has yet is to be used for the benefit of others.
Our congratulations and thanks to you, Fritz Kreisler. Now Mr. Kreisler plays his own Liebeslied.
Thank you.
With us this evening is a close friend and associate of Mr. Kreisler over the past 12 years, Mr. Wallace McGill, producer and director of The Telephone Hour. Wally, what was your first impression, your impression of Kreisler when you met the great artist after hearing him all these years?
Well, Ben, I'd love to tell this because to me it is one of the things I shall never forget. I had the privilege of attending 5 solo violin and piano recitals within a 2-week period in Carnegie Hall, early in 1938. And among the 5 was Fritz Kreisler, whom I had never seen before in my life. But I'll never forget when Fritz Kreisler walked out onto the stage, as you may remember, as he went to play, he always flicked back his coat to make room for his violin rest beneath his lapel. And as he did that, I had the feeling that he had on a great coat, which he opened and enveloped everybody within the warmth of his being. Now, this is an impression that I have never lost. I've talked to Mr. Kreisler many, many times since that time. It was proven to me that this warmth was carried over into a radio appearance where a man could not be seen when we received, after an all Kreisler program, all Kreisler music, on which Mr. Kreisler appeared with Don Voorhees and the Bell Telephone Orchestra. We received a letter from a woman in Wisconsin who wrote something like this. Says, "Gentlemen, I don't know who Mr. Kreisler is. I have never heard of him. I have never heard his music before. But I must say that when he played and when I heard his music last night, it took me back to my childhood in Vienna." Here was the warmest kind of contribution or tribute that could be paid to Mr. Kreisler, because his music bespoke Vienna from the word go.
It almost feels, Wally, that it's a tribute beyond pure musicianship into a tribute to Kreisler the man.
This is a tribute to the Kreisler as the man. It's a tribute to his understanding of the musical, international language of music. Mm-hmm. I like to tell a little story of what happened after his very first appearance on the Telephone Hour on July 17, 1944. We had a reception for him after the first broadcast, and Mr. Kreisler asked us who was invited to the party. And we told him who was going to be there, very important figures in business and music. And he said, "Aren't the men of the orchestra going to be there?" We said, "No, there wasn't room for them." He said, "Well, you know, I'd much rather go around the corner and have a drink with each one."
You know, among the many that are connected with Fritz Kreisler, the compositions, I mean, among the many compositions that are connected with Fritz Kreisler's name, I wonder if there's one that you know from your constant contacts with him in concerts.
Well, I heard Mr. Kreisler tell one person that asking him that question is like asking a Don Juan, or Don Juan, if you wish, who his favorite girlfriend is. Mr. Kreisler doesn't like to name favorites, and I don't believe he ever has, but I certainly know that one of his favorites is Caprice Viennois.
That's a wonderful little anecdote. Thank you indeed, Wally McGill. And now, here is Caprice Viennois. Thank you. Now, in conclusion, Mr. Kreisler, may we recall one of the high points of your concerts when the audience would clamor for an encore and finally, smilingly, you would give them the glorious playing of the old refrain. So here it is, recreated, and as a compliment, we're going to call on our good friend David Ross to bring to us the words of Arthur O'Shaughnessy's ode which celebrates the importance of music and music makers in our world. The Ode of O'Shaughnessy with David Ross and Fritz Kreisler's performance of The Old Refrain.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams, world losers and world forsakers, on whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. With wonderful deathless ditties, we build up the world's great cities. And out of a fabulous story, we fashion an empire's glory. One man with a dream at pleasure shall go forth and conquer a crown, and three with a new song's measure can trample an empire down. We in the ages lying in the buried past of the earth built Nineveh with our sighing and Babel itself with our mirth. And o'er through them with prophesying to the old of the new world's worth. For each age is a dream that is dying, or one that is coming to birth. ¶¶